Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about some big changes going on at Goldman Sachs, and Facebook gets grilled as it goes to Washington. Please hit subscribe to keep up with these and the latest in FinTech news. All right, some exciting things happened this week already, and we're only halfway through it. Joining me this week is Monica.
Hey, John, good to be here.
Great to have you here. Goldman Sachs had their earnings release yesterday, and there was an interesting number in there, $1.5 billion, and that's what the CFO said, that Goldman Sachs had invested, not lost quite yet, but invested into their new consumer-based ventures. And this includes things like the Apple Card, which they're gearing up for, their Marcus product, which they said actually they were going to pull back on the lending on Marcus to free up capital for their Apple Card expansion that they're anticipating in late summer, apparently. And you know, I think I've changed my mind. I mentioned when we talked about this release that I wasn't really that interested, but the card does look kind of cool, right?
Oh my God.
Some of the tools that they have, I mean, it's going to have all those Apple graphics and just make things maybe easier. So at least, I mean, I think it's a zero annual fee. So if it doesn't cost anything, yeah, I think I'll try it out.
Well, go for it. I will tell you, I do not care what my credit card looks like.
I love it. I love design. I just want to see
it. I love design too.
And
I'm
want to
image,
have it.
Image interested as anybody else. But when it comes to my credit card, utility, benefits, convenience. Now, the Apple Card may be great for you for that too. So
yeah,
report back.
Yeah, definitely those points add up. And they all get blown once there's an Apple product announcement as well. I saw a funny graphic on Twitter where it shows the grandma from the Tweety Bird cartoons throwing money into the fireplace. And they're saying, oh, this is what happens when there's an Apple product announcement in our household. So anyways, Goldman Sachs is working on a couple of initiatives, and as well as investments in fintech. The past few years, they're making this huge change into going into the consumer space. And the way the newspaper headlines put it is changing from a Wall Street bank to, and a very high toned, I mean, you think of Goldman Sachs in the 80s and 90s, this
yeah.
is a, well, with what $1 million am I going to be a customer at Goldman Sachs? This is, this is for the wealthy.
They have really gone down market, not in a bad way, but just in a mass affluent way. And they have
slumming it down in the upper middle class.
And moving so much more into just kind of traditional retail banking, even if it might be technology enabled, instead of their historical trading and investment banking. It's a real shift for Goldman.
And they've been keeping up. They said they picked up some market share since Deutsche Bank is getting out of the equity investment banking world. They're getting some of that money. So they're making money any which way, this Goldman Sachs.
So who are some of the companies they've invested in recently?
Yeah, right. So they just announced, coincidentally, an investment in a fintech startup called Raisin. And this is a pan-European marketplace for savings and investment products. So it allows you to find the best rates for consumers to get out there. So this fits nicely into their Marcus product offering. You know, maybe it'll get folded in or something someday.
Although, couldn't it also potentially drive customers away from Marcus? Because didn't Marcus just recently lower their APR? And theoretically, Raisin's entire point of existence is to help people funnel their deposit dollars to the place with the highest rates.
Yeah, maybe their strategy someday Raisin will be like the back end of Marcus or something like that. We'll see. It's hard to tell with if there's some technology that they like or the whole business model. Another fintech that they're investing in is called Lendable. And this is a UK-based company that's looking at really challenging the peer-to-peer lending model. Of course, using machine learning for an autonomous credit underwriting, blah, blah, blah. You've heard this before. And they offer personal loans. It's in the UK, so between £1,000 and £20,000. So again, expanding into the consumer space. and doing it in a smart way. We're looking at companies doing innovative things. So I expect that along with Marcus doing well, that their long-term future looks good as well.
Yeah, definitely some interesting things to watch.
And the interesting thing with Lendable is it's based in the UK, and a lot of investments have been shying away because of Brexit. The UK is still, and London especially, is still a hotbed of fintech innovation.
Yeah, you've got a lot of talent there. And if you're thinking about what's the value here, it's probably the data that you're getting from the machine learning, right? Which should presumably have some exportability across borders, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get to what we really want to talk about this week. Facebook getting clubbed over the head in Washington, not just in Congress, but the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin also said that Libra looked like, I forget exactly how he put it, like a substantial threat, essentially.
Yeah.
Based on his, I'm sure, his hundreds of hours of research into the white paper.
Hundreds of hours. This administration always does their homework. So taking a step back, just generally, the landscape for big tech has definitely changed. And this week you would have seen it. The Senate held hearings with Facebook's leaders. I believe the House also had hearings with the public policy leaders of Google, Facebook, and Amazon, and possibly Apple as well. I apologize. And it's a different world. So recently, just to kind of lay out some of the landscape, the Justice Department and the FTC, they recently decided to divide the responsibility for antitrust investigations of these companies. The Justice Department is spearheading the effort with Google and Apple, while the FTC has Facebook and Amazon. And of course, just last week, the FTC voted to fine Facebook about $5 billion, which is by far the largest fine against a tech company in the agency's history.
Which, of course, sent the stock right up.
As I believe we discussed a few weeks ago on this exact podcast. So the House Judiciary Committee also has opened a bipartisan inquiry into the power and practices of these companies. And they have started to request documents from the companies and hear testimony from confidential witnesses who may fear retribution by the tech giants. So that is quite interesting as well. So in the context of all this going on, Mr. Marcus, formerly of PayPal, who's been heading up Facebook's cryptocurrency efforts, kind of on the down low for a couple of years, came to Washington and kind of got hammered. So he attempted to kind of be conciliatory, right? Saying things like, we've made mistakes in the past. We have been working and are working hard to get better, which I would call nothing but corporate pablum. And I think...
I love that word, by the way. Pablum. SAT days.
There you go. The senators agreed. There were some pretty amazing quotes that out of this. One of them I would like to highlight. It is actually from the House's antitrust subcommittee chairman, who I might mispronounce his name. It's David Cicilline. I apologize. He's a Democrat from Rhode Island.
You should look it up on Facebook.
I probably should. So I do want to call out this quote because I actually thought, gosh, it'd be nice if this is actually how it goes. In an effort to promote and continue this new economy, Congress and antitrust enforcers allowed these firms to regulate themselves with little oversight. But as a result, the internet has become increasingly concentrated, less open, and growingly hostile to innovation and entrepreneurship. So golly gee, wouldn't it be nice if these hearings actually and investigations actually got us somewhere closer to resolving some of that tension.
It sounded more like people trying to score political points by beginning having quotes. I stood up to the face of Facebook and I told them myself.
There was Sherrod Brown making the analogy to Facebook being a toddler with a box of matches.
I love that one.
Why don't we just let you burn down another house?
Yeah, everyone's like, it's like an arsonist saying they're just learning or something, yeah.
But there's quite a bit to dig into here. With regards to Facebook and Mr. Marcus's testimony, you can, I think, imagine that senators probably feel, well, actually, I would say the government apparatus generally probably feels a lot more comfortable exerting regulatory oversight for a financial product, even if it might be a stablecoin and not a dollar, than it does with social media. And so I felt a real shift in just kind of the overall fluency of understanding of the potential problems of this from senators this go round than I did in some of their prior efforts when they have been questioning CEOs and head counsels and policymakers of these kinds of companies. Is that something that you noticed as well?
Well, two things kind of occurred to me. I watched some of it yesterday, and one was that there's going to be so much political pressure on the regulators to, you know, just reject everything that Facebook, I mean, they're going to have to rework this Libra thing to meet the regulator requirements. I mean, in their white paper, they say that they're going to disengage, essentially. In the testimony yesterday, that the Calibra, the association, wouldn't be regulated because they're not the ones providing the services. Their partners would, like Visa or MasterCard or something like that, right? Or the banks. But that seems super unlikely that the SEC is going to go, you're right, it's not your, you just set all the rules. No, of course not. I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
So it seems a little bit idealistic, and they'd like to have that be true, but I don't think it's going to be. If there's something illegal and they're not going to, the regulators in any country aren't going to see things that way. So that disengagement seemed super unlikely. But he kept that up. That guy has a super straight face, no matter what they said. He was really good at pursing his lips.
David Marcus?
Yes, you got the new Facebook Calibra representative, or head of Calibra for Facebook. One of 100 partners, as he was quick to point out many times.
Many times.
And the other thing that occurred to me was that, you know, there hasn't been clarity from the regulators, and certainly not a joint kind of view on how to regulate cryptocurrencies and blockchain in general.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been kind of some movements towards that happening. It's super surprising that you would think that it's been a few years since the regulators, since 2013, I think I read, where they first started looking into it. And now here we are in 2019, and there's no standard regulation. There's no clear rule that says if you do this, you fall under this rulemaking body or regulator. There's nothing like that, and it feels like they kind of want to keep the door open. And just like any technology, it can be used for a lot of different things. If you create an exchange, well, that's very different from wanting to create CryptoKitties. So the rules around that, you know, where they fall into, really have to be clarified. So maybe this will create that pressure.
Force the
or
regulator's
that,
hand.
You know, when the congressman asks, well, what have you been doing, SEC? What's the rule on this? And they kind of throw up their hands. Maybe that's not going to fly anymore. And I understand maybe they want to keep their flexibility, but...
And also, aren't the legislators supposed to write the laws? And the SEC is an enforcer regulator?
So they might,
right.
So they might, this might prompt them to write a law to start that regulation process and some broad outlines of how things should run. And then the regulators, of course, they write the thousands of pages of detailed rules based on those laws. So it's hard to say, you know... you're doing something wrong, or you're not, you're expected to do this or that, or protect consumers in a certain way if you haven't set the rules yet.
Yes, and I think that, well, interestingly, yesterday, David Marcus from Facebook assured the committee that they would not be moving forward until all regulator concerns were satisfied, which, talk is cheap, especially from a Facebook executive, but it's still, that's a pretty impressive promise, even though I doubt it. All that said, I think they're going to have a very hard time here because of Facebook's size and scope.
And reputation.
even beyond the reputation, because what I actually think is more threatening to policymakers and regulators and Washington, D.C., is the potential devaluation of the U.S. dollar as the currency that is the world standard that can be used to enforce American foreign policy in all kinds of complicated ways through security laws and embargoes and the like. And they are not going to want to dilute the power of the dollar to do that. Now, I am not saying that there's nothing else that could do that, but why would you let a company that you know you don't trust, because you know you shouldn't, why would you give them this opening?
Or any company is designed just to make profits for themselves. So,
totally.
I mean, that's their function. So, and the management of currency is not aligned with that. So,
and to that point, these kinds of currencies are also a threat to traditional financial services companies, even though many of them willingly or relatively unwillingly have signed on to Libra. It's kind of like, you know, you don't want to be left out of a party, but you don't really want to go to the party.
Well, okay, so what do you say when Mr. Marcus keeps saying that this is a nonprofit with 100 different partners and those financial providers will make money on their services?
Then when he tells me that it's a nonprofit that will be regulated by a Swiss entity that Facebook has never made contact with, I'm not impressed.
Yeah, I saw that. That's right. I saw that in the headline. I didn't read the whole article. But yeah, I saw that they had no idea.
It's not a good look.
Yeah.
It does not show that Facebook's doing their homework. And I think Facebook is encountering some of the norm differences between traditional financial services and traditional technology practices.
Yeah, I like the way that he tried to align Calibra with other international financial rulemaking bodies that are based in Switzerland, like the BIS, and he mentioned these other
that are completely independent from the people that he was talking to right then. I don't think that was the best look either. I think he might have been better served by a little more deference to U.S. policy.
Well, if he changes the name to,
because senators love their power prerogatives as much as anybody else, and they have just as big egos as Mark Zuckerberg.
So when Mnuchin and these congressmen are talking about things like terrorist financing and protection against money laundering, do you think the code in there is that protection of the U.S. dollar as well?
Yes, absolutely. Having the U.S. dollar be kind of like the most fungible monetary asset in the world is a huge asset to the U.S. government.
Yeah,
huge.
The oil prices are tied to the dollar. Transactions have to be done in U.S. dollars.
Yeah, many international loans are done in U.S. dollars.
Central bank reserves around the world.
There was at least one senator who was expressing the wise impulse not to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Toomey.
And yes, Senator Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania. And he was talking about how we would not want to hobble our own technology companies and not be at the cutting edge of technology options that are coming on. So I do agree with him in sentiment, and I guess that's why we pay these senators the big bucks, because it will be hard to thread that needle. I'm not super confident that they will. I also need to point out the continuing disingenuousness of some of these technology companies. So,
Hit me, Monica.
I'm about to. A representative asked Matt Perrault, who is the director of public policy at Facebook. I do not know if they were actually under oath for this. The question was, what is the largest social media network platform company by active users in the world? Mr. Perrault, the director of public policy at Facebook, said he didn't know. The representative on the committee said, it's Facebook. Because you know what? 2.7 billion people use Facebook services each month. There is no way that the director of public policy at Facebook doesn't know that Facebook is the largest social media network in the world. No way. Oh, yeah. And I have another one for you. This one, care of Google.
Define social.
Mr. Cohen, who is the economic policy chief at Google, was asked about a recent Wall Street Journal article about fake listings on Google Maps. This gentleman said he wasn't aware of it. Now, I am here to tell you, if your economic policy chief doesn't read front page news about your company on the Wall Street Journal, you might want to get a new one. I do not believe either of these answers are true. I think that what I believe the Wall Street Journal characterized as executives sidestepping questions, I would probably more opinionatedly call lying. It certainly doesn't sound as journalistic. Yeah. So,
my lawyer doesn't lie.
That, I think, just gives you a taste of how much BS was still on display.
Yeah, and how we probably need more technical people giving these questions. And I don't know, is there some group that's delegated to do this technical research?
Well, I mean, it sounds like the Justice Department and the FTC are probably going to be building up some of that capability beyond what they have right now. That I think it will still be a long way to go before we feel like the senators and some the House representatives who are asking these questions in a more public format show a level of fluency.
All right, so I think the Calibra and Libra have a lot of obstacles just in terms of what they realistically can expect. I mean, they say their Facebook will be disengaged. This will be a nonprofit. This will be managed by partners. They'll be not subject to regulation. It's actually mentioned in their white paper, and Mr. Marcus mentioned in his testimony as well, which seems at the least somewhat unrealistic. I think that 2020 date for its release probably not happen, but that's my guess.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. And as I said at the start of this section, I think that the regulatory and oversight environment for big technology companies is just completely flipped from what it was even just a few years ago. And there are some real legitimate issues at stake, and we will be covering them closely to see how it shakes out at a national level.
Yeah, yeah, and that's in the U.S. They're thinking international, so maybe they'll start it off in some other countries. Probably not the EU, though.
That could actually be quite dicey for them as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of protections and regulations.
And I just think it could easily be perceived as a slap in the face to U.S. regulators. When you are a U.S. company, you are headquartered in the U.S., you are listed on a U.S. stock exchange, for you just to make a promise that you're not going to move ahead until the regulators are satisfied, and then decide, no, I am going to move ahead because I'm satisfied, which sounds very Facebook to me.
Well, that's within the U.S. Yeah. Yeah, so a lot to get into here, and we'll keep you updated as it develops. Now it's time for our final bites, where we take a look at a number and the fascinating story behind it.
So I'm going to go first, and my number is a $5 billion fat-fingered mistake. So over the weekend...
Not in my bank account.
Not up and not down. There's a cryptocurrency exchange, Poloniex, that needed to move 50 million of Tether crypto coins from a blockchain network called Omni to another one called Tron. Oh my gosh, these names. and the Tether employee who was putting in the order accidentally messed it up and created $5 billion worth of new Tether that was not supposed to exist and sent it on to Poloniex instead of the 50 million of existing Tether that was supposed to be moved. So a $3.9 billion market suddenly got real fat to 8.9 million. And Tether's CTO tweeted that mistake was due to an issue with the token decimals.
I love these euphemisms.
It just goes to show that human error is just so hard to get rid of in this world. Like, that is a data entry error. That is, your thumb is in the wrong place. You fat fingered it.
Kind of like the voting machines in the U.S. Well, stable coins are protected from mistakes, and You know, you would think this caused some volatility in the Tether price.
Yeah, and I don't have all the stats on there, and I believe that it was corrected, you know, relatively quickly. The nice thing about an error that big is you'll usually see it pretty quickly.
I bet. And spent quickly. They're on it. Yeah, thanks for that. Just another example of even when you're backed by a currency or a basket of currencies, like Libra will be, there's still room for error and problems. All right, so my final bite is 3. And this is the areas in which biases can be introduced into artificial intelligence. There's an article getting released all over, and I'm looking at the CNBC one, which looks at 3 areas. The program itself, which is like the algorithm,
mm-hmm.
The data that you use in the AI process, and of course, those defective people who design the AI system. All of these can introduce bias that can greatly affect your AI process. So you might think you have an objective, unbiased, a straightforward look at whatever your process is. Let's say you're looking at fraud, or you know, facial recognition is a great example mm-hmm. that comes up.
And that's widely known as well, some of the pitfalls of facial recognition,
right,
AI data.
Widely used in the Face ID on the Apple phones, but they get trained on the people who design it. So they tend to recognize white and Korean faces better than others and mm-hmm. have a higher fault rate.
And when you unwittingly introduce bias into AI, it seems like it's kind of the nature of artificial intelligence for that bias to get amplified over time. It's kind of hard to reduce it.
The example they mention, the focus is the effect that this has on cybersecurity. So it introduces these flaws that make it easier for people to break in and take advantage of these biases. Again, just like a stable coin is not always stable, and AI is not always objective, there's things to look at. So we'll link to the article so you can look at that research and try to recognize bias in your own work.
Yeah, and if you're in the artificial intelligence space, we'd love to hear some of the ways that you're trying to reduce the bias in your work.
All right, that's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news, and we'll see you next week.
Bye for now.
Oh, you took Steve's.
Yeah.